Before we begin, Simon and I would like to acknowledge that we're recording this podcast on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woi-wurrung people of the Kulin Nations. We'd like to acknowledge and pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to any First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
My name is Ryan.
And I'm Simran.
And this is the podcast for burnt out divas.
Trying to stay
broadly relevant. Hey Simran, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much pain are you in right now?
A big ol' 7. So if I randomly shout, just shut up about it, okay? It's so glad to be back five weeks in, you guys. In the middle of an endo flare. That's what I'm doing for you guys.
Right? So brave.
So brave I am. What about you?
Maybe a two. You know, I kind of need to shit, and I guess that's a pain of sorts.
Wow, what a great opener this is to be back. We're so back, baby. Lots happening in culture this week, and I wanted to start with a surprise for Ryan. Okay, I don't know if seen this, but it's true. The rumors are true. And if you're an OG listener, you would know that the Ryan Hamilton has always wanted to go on Big Brother.
No.
Big Brother is back, baby.
Are they casting?
They're casting, and it's going to be happening at the OG location of Dreamworld on the Gold Coast.
Gold Coast trip.
Yeah, literally, they are casting. And I think that a segment we should do on the podcast, maybe like next week's deep, we can just do it, filling out the application, you know?
I'm completely down.
Yeah. And comment on the meme dump that we post for this article, for this podcast, if you think that's a good idea and what we should say in his application. So yes, Big Brother is in fact coming back to the Gold Coast. And I'm reading this. I got like the information from Gold Coast Magazine. I felt that was right. You know, I said, I don't care about any other article, any other publication. Gold Coast Magazine is where it's at. And yeah, it's happening on the Gold Coast. And Daniel Monaghan, SVP Content and Programming at Paramount Australia, said the demand for a reboot of the original format has been deafening, and we have listened. With a brand new house built on familiar ground, this season will be centered on real people with real stories, talking in real time. That could be you, Ryan.
Wait, I fucking want that.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
No, because I think the big thing, like, I feel like it kind of like people fell off of it when it was like very kind of like celebrity mixed with real people. And I felt like people fell off of that. But no, it's coming back. The production company behind it is Endemol Shine Australia. They are also behind Married at First Sight and Survivor, which a lot of controversy around both of them. And so, especially with Jonathan LaPaglia being let go from the show. But I think that it'll turn out to be a really great season, especially because Ryan Hamilton's probably maybe going to be on it.
No, because that's crazy. Because do you remember when we were together on the Gold Coast over summer? And I was like, my goal for this year is to get on Big Brother. It wasn't even coming back at that point. I was just like, broadly.
You put it into the universe. This is happening. And you listeners are here at the beginning of this journey, all right? We are so on.
No, and Endemol is going to love this podcast, I reckon.
Totally. And when they say, like, who you are, you'll say, podcaster. Podcaster and theater maker, aka most annoying person in the house.
Crazy. No, because I'll have my Courtney Act moment, you know?
Yeah, this is it. Actually, you have to, for the greater good of this podcast.
I'll be that woke friend.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God, I'm so excited for you to be on TV. Exciting. We have to clear all of your Twitter. Yeah, I don't know. We have to go through. We have to see. Just in case. I don't know.
In other culture news, have you been following what's been going on with Pedro Pascal?
No, tell me the tea.
Okay, so you know how Pedro Pascal has a trans sister?
Yes, Lux.
Which, yes. Anywho, so like naturally Pedro is like not an asshole and like pro-trans people.
Yes.
So basically JK Rowling is an asshole.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, constantly making turfy posts. But basically Pedro called her a, what was the specific phrasing? I have two articles on this. One, the Daily Mail article on it. And one is from them, and I searched the keyword loser, which is what Pedro said, not quoted in the Daily Mail article, but quoted on them. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. So Pedro said in said about J.K. Rowling in response to her response to the UK Supreme Court's landmark anti-trans ruling was calling her a heinous loser, calling it heinous loser behavior, which, like, unfortunately, that was factual journalism. You know, that was peer-reviewed, evidence-supported.
Totally.
But so basically all the TERFs on the internet have been like absolutely coming for his throat, which I'm like, you hate to see it, especially he's promoting a movie. He's just a guy.
No, and he's promoting so many movies at this point. He's like in Fantastic Four and like
he's in everything.
He's in everything right now.
Have you seen him in a single movie?
Okay. Way to out us right now because I haven't, and neither have you, so shut up.
I've actually never seen him on screen.
No, and I've never seen him on The Last of Us either. Like, that was, I feel like, his, like, big show.
I thought he blew up on The Mandalorian.
Oh, I didn't even realize that he was in that. But I love all of his interviews.
I love him.
love him.
Kind of, he's just an influencer to me, you know?
Yeah, totally. Imagine this man who's like committed his life to like his art, and you're like, I love my favorite influencer. Yeah.
But it's really interesting because he has anxiety, right? And he's spoken out about how, like, on red carpets, he'll like sometimes like hold hands or like lean on cast members to like not get anxious, which is so fair and valid. Mm-hmm. But as a result, the like TERF community on Twitter has been posting videos of this, being like, oh, so all I need to do to grope women is just pretend I have anxiety. And it's like, no, that is heinous loser behavior, my dear J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Literally, I also feel like it's definitely reaching, and they like putting all of this, especially with the Fantastic Four press right now, because Pedro is very close to his co-star Vanessa Kirby, who plays Storm, and both of them are very like tactile, you know. And when you see like Vanessa Kirby in like interviews with her other co-stars, she's very similar, and so is Pedro with like all of his co-stars. So like, I can imagine that it would be a very daunting experience to go through such like rigorous like press moments, and everything is so, you know, like time capsuled, like, you know, in time with clips and blah blah blah. It makes sense. I, as a person who is also like needs to like hold somebody's hand and is like a tactile person, whenever I'm like even slightly anxious or just like feeling needy, justice to Pedro.
No, and because God forbid someone has friends at work, you know.
Sorry.
The TERFs standing for him.
The TERFs could never. All the like people at their workplace have a group chat without them, you know?
Yeah. What's the last thing you have for me?
Okay, so I was like tossing up between like two things. Like G Flip and Chrishell Stass, they got like remarried again, and that was like really cute. And I was like, oh, that's really cute. But I want to talk about love breaking down instead, because I don't know if you remember last year, but I was obsessed with Love Island USA.
I do.
Every day I was waking up in the morning, and that was like my morning routine. I couldn't really get so much into this year's Love Island USA. I like kept that through TikTok, but I'm still obsessed with the OG. And unfortunately, it seems like one of the OG couples that like everybody was obsessed with. So this is Janae Craig and Kenny Rodriguez. Janae has unfollowed him on Instagram. And I know everyone's like, oh, but like, who cares? Unfollowing it. Hey, that is like the modern day.
No, that's serious.
Yeah. Modern day, like, this is war, baby. So, and it's not just Janae. It's all of like Janae's friends and people from that season of Love Island. So that includes like Miguel and Leah, and Ryan is just like glazed over, but that's okay.
No, I'm listening. This is shocking.
Totally. I just feel like very stressed about this because... Janae and Kenny were just like the most like lovey-dovey like PDA kind of couple in my opinion.
Yeah.
They also have this new spin-off show from that particular cast because everybody like fell in love with this cast from last year called Love Island Beyond the Villa. So people do think that maybe it's like not a rough patch, but it could just be like, you know, something for the show. And this is my qualm. I wanted to love that show so badly, but I feel like the drama is so manufactured, and I hate that. The beauty of Love Island USA was that nobody was watching it, and so people went on like genuinely wanting to like find love or whatever. But after last season, people have started watching it, and so they knew how to like play the game, you know, and they knew that they would come back out of the villa and like get all of these followers, and that has ruined it. And I think going into the spinoff, it's the same vibe. And I'll say it. And that's the Love Island fans will come for me. And I hope there's one listening.
One ally in the audience.
One ally in the audience. And that's the tea for culture. Broadly News.
Have you been following the whole, you know, the whole, like, how they're banning the internet for, like, children?
Yes, they love summarizing, to have one.
Summarizing there. Which, but I'll add nuance in a bit. But basically, the UK is going through a similar sort of, like, age-gating process of, like, protect, allegedly, quotation marks, protecting children from dangerous materials on the internet. Which, let me say, first and foremost, big fan of protecting children before we delve into this. But it's happened very suddenly. And I only became aware of this on, like, the weekend because on Twitter, I have, like, a second Twitter for...
Yep.
And all of a sudden, I was, like, seeing all these people in the UK, like, sharing, like, how to get around this, like, age blocking thing that had suddenly appeared. And so basically Twitter was blocking X, sorry, not to deadname her, X, as she's called, was suddenly, like, blocking basically anyone from seeing anything that could at all be, like, over 18, which is, like, all porn, basically. It is all porn. It's not basically all porn. It is all porn. And so there was, like, a lot of, like, guides on, like, how to change your account from, like, UK to US going around.
Yeah.
Anywho, and I found that interesting because in Australia, we're on the precipice of a similar sort of, like, age thing on the internet. Now, the way the UK did it, they kind of, like, left it up to the companies. So, like, the way Meta's handled it is Meta basically already has a lot of algorithms to try and figure out how old you are and try to already police what you see. So they've got, like, their teen accounts. So they already, that they didn't have much changes over the weekend. But Twitter, because they haven't historically had any of that stuff, just suddenly, like, so many people in the UK suddenly couldn't see what they use Twitter for. Which I found really interesting. Now, in Australia at the moment, YouTube, there was a lot of discussion when they were talking about the age verification laws in Australia. YouTube was going to be excluded and then it was going to be included. And at the moment, YouTube is going to be included, which makes sense because a lot of children see things on the YouTube. But it's also interesting because YouTube, I think of it as TV, but, you know, whatever. And it is also, did you know, the biggest social network with children?
No, I didn't know, but that makes sense.
It makes sense, but it's like, but it's not even like, oh, they're all kind of ranked. It's YouTube, and then everything else is just kind of tied, which I thought was crazy. Because growing up, YouTube was, like, fun, but, like, I don't know. What's your perspective on YouTube?
I think, like, having, like yells and nephews, they're very, like, YouTube. They're, yeah. Their platform, right? Because I think that a lot of parents allow them more so on YouTube because there's not that much of, like, a social interaction, like, on those platforms, you know? Like, I wouldn't really classify it the same way that I would like TikTok or Instagram, you know? Yeah. I feel like I find them, like, vastly different. And I also think, like, a lot of, like, kids, like, get an, or, like, younger parents, like, will make an account for their children and then, like, things that, like, loop and things like that, you know, like Rachel.
Yeah,
like those sort of things, like shows and, like, songs and things like that. So it's not surprising.
Yeah. But I find it interesting because when these laws were initially being considered, I was seeing, like, all over, like, in particularly when I was going through Parliament in Melbourne, which is where the government's offices are located, a lot of advertising just for Instagram has teen accounts, so Instagram is already safe for children, which I found really interesting as a marketing strategy where you're actually explicitly targeting the public servants who work in the government offices above, like, around here. So YouTube's doing a similar thing. They're hosting an event at Parliament House in Canberra this week, inviting, like, children's content creators to basically come in and be like, yeah, YouTube's great and very safe and already does a lot of work, which it does. Like, it has YouTube Kids and stuff. And, like, if you're a responsible parent, I think you actually already, there are tools to, like, help keep the internet safe. But anywho, this is what the government's doing. So it's all very interesting. And it's all just kind of fraught because there's still no, like, clarification on actually how we're going to enforce ages apart from, like, maybe uploading ID, which is crazy. And it might affect, you know, how we search on the internet. Like, you won't be able to use Google because it'll show so many results hidden because there's so much, like, checking that needs to be done that people... Mm-hmm. Anywho, the internet, big changes, shake-ups coming to Australia.
And this is not to blame parents. Sorry. It is a scary world.
Yeah. Oh, the internet's horrific. Yeah. Disgusting technology.
No, get rid of it. Wait.
No, because... No, here's the thing. If people were advocating for destroying the internet, I think I would prefer that over...
limiting it?
There's more nuance to that, but...
No, and...
I think, actually, my as I was saying that one, I was like, I have a more nuanced take here.
Okay. We were talking about the fact that, like, we grew up in a time where we weren't worried about how the internet would, like, affect us. How did you want to bring that up? How did that?
Yeah, I just find it weird because, like, now everyone's constantly thinking about teens on the internet, teens on social media. And I'm like, because we weren't the first generation to grow up on the internet. You know, people did MySpace before us and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think we were the first generation to, like, grow up with, like, news feeds and algorithms, like, mediating so much
and
of,
like,
our existence.
And, like, social media. Oh, I guess, and like, so, MySpace is, like, kind of like
But those networks were different, and, like, early Facebook was different, and even early Instagram, because Instagram, I think, only became default algorithmic possibly after we graduated, but some algorithms were already creeping in because Instagram stories appeared in our final year of high school. It's so interesting reflecting on high school as a historical moment. But, like, early social media was so, like, just chronological, and you just saw things that popped up. And it's just interesting how algorithms have shifted it, because now it's, like, so easy for a kid to become radicalized, to become a literal Nazi. And you're like, oh, maybe that shouldn't happen.
Moving on. Sorry.
And Nazi.
Speaking of, I don't know, that's, like, a terrible transition.
You've done the transition without deciding where to go.
Terrible. Both of them work.
What are you talking about?
The flotilla.
Do that as the transition.
Okay, great. That was a terrible trip. Here we are. So two Australians on board a boat was intercepted by Israel while they tried to transport aid to Gaza. So it was called the Handala, and it was led by the activist group, the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. You might remember them from June. They sent another Freedom Flotilla called the Madeleine, and that was had 12 campaigners on board, including the activist Greta Thunberg. They were also intercepted and then taken back home. And prior to that, The Guardian reports that in 2010, 9 flotilla activists en route to Gaza on board the Mavi Marmara flagship vessel were shot at a total of 30 times by Israeli soldiers, and 5 were killed by close range gunshot wounds to the head. And I wanted to say that because I think the history of, like, flotillas going to Gaza is important to keep in mind as well. So coming back to the Handala, it was around 50 kilometers from the Egyptian coast and 100K west of Gaza when it was intercepted. And the Israeli Foreign Ministry posted on X. I also find it very interesting that that's how we get a lot of news coming out of Gaza, especially, like, from different, like, ministries. I don't know. It feels unsettling, but okay. And basically they said that the flotilla was illegally entering the maritime zone of Gaza. They said that the vessel is safely making its way to the shores of Israel. So this is all coming from the Israeli Foreign Ministry. Meanwhile, the Freedom Flotilla Coalition has been keeping kind of updates going as much as they can, obviously, about the actual flotilla. And they say that it was violently intercepted. And two Australians, including journalist Tanya Tan Safi and human rights activist Robert Martin, were among the 21 activists on board the ship when it was intercepted. You might remember Tanya Tan from BuzzFeed. That is where I came to know them. But, you know, it's a really big thing to go all the way and, like, to board this flotilla to give aid to the people on the ground in Gaza. And if you didn't know, that has been a huge issue amongst this, like, genocide. And recently it was reported that, I think it's now, it was 111. Last week it was reported that it was 111 people that have died because of starvation in Gaza. And this is because a lot of the aid sites in Gaza are being intercepted by Israeli attacks. So people aren't able to seek aid. And, you know, those deaths also include people who are, like, distributing aid as well. You know, like, it's quite a devastating. It's every time that I look at it, it's like it gets more devastating. And
I read a report this morning from, it was talking about, like, a baby who died who weighed less than they did when they were born.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck.
Yeah, that's disgusting. And the World Health Organization has claimed it as a man-made famine. And so this flotilla was just trying to reach Gaza and give aid as, you know, makes sense in this situation. And I think a lot of people have felt quite, like, hopeless. Again, we all do. We feel hopeless from the other side of the world. Yeah. I really urge people to email their local MPs, and we'll put in a link down below. It, like, fills out the email for you already, ready to go. Because I feel like sometimes it can be, like, if you've never done it before, it's intimidating. You're like, what do you say to your local MP? Who knows? This will, like, fill out all your information and, like, figure out who to send it to. Put that in the link down below. Because I think making noise, and this is what the Freedom Flotilla Coalition has, like, asked asked us to do also is to make noise in our local governments to make sure that they like condemn the actions of Israel. Recently, France recognized the state of Palestine. Australia put out a statement condemning the blocking of aid sites, but they didn't recognize the state of Palestine. I think the more noise that we make is kind of what we can do at this point. So I really encourage everyone to look at that link in the bio. That's all we can really say on it right now. It's a really fucked situation.
Yeah. And for the next bit of news, we're going to bring it closer to home in the beautiful to some city of Narm, Melbourne.
Beautiful to some is crazy.
Well, the thing that I've discovered posting on Instagram and TikTok that I think Melbourne is beautiful is that that is a controversial take to some.
Yeah.
It's true. Not everyone agrees.
Ryan got like intense comments from him saying that he liked Melbourne.
Like, and not even like people from Sydney being like, it's a stupid city. People in Melbourne who were like, I hate it. And it's like really privileged of you to like it here. And I was like, right. Yeah. Okay.
And thanks. I see. Okay. You know, sure.
Anywho. So Melbourne has quite a few social housing towers, which you might have seen around. They're like big sort of brownish, grayish concrete housing towers. There's quite a few in North Melbourne and a couple in, I was about to say also North Melbourne. There's some in the South as well. And also the West. There's some around everywhere.
Melbourne. Beautiful city.
There's so many directions in this city of ours.
No, and I've always said that.
The Victorian government is looking to essentially just demolish these towers because in their mind, they're like, we're developing. And the towers are old and run down, but the government is trying to like demolish these towers to build new social housing, which is good. But their plan is to demolish the towers and then build new social housing. And I'm not sure if you can see the flaw in that plan where sort of chronologically they're demolishing the towers and then building the homes. There's a little gap in that plan, which they haven't really dealt with. But there's news coming out that apparently the Victorian Government Housing Agency is hiring a home buyer whose specific job is to start to buy new houses to have somewhere for these people to move into. But it's been a really distressing time for the people who live in these towers. There's been a lot of protests recently because the government has been doing investigative work into the demolition works. So there's been people drilling around these towers with no information like given to residents. And sort of when they have been having meeting with residents, they've not been in spaces where everyone can fit. So it's like, you're not actually trying to engage in good faith with these people who, like, this is their home that you're proposing to demolish. Like, I think you owe it to them, care and courtesy, but you know, anywho. So it is interesting that they're starting to look at buying properties to help these people move out into. But it's messy because a lot of people who live in social housing have a long history of like being forced to move. And it's like, well, this is just another time of you being forced to move. And there's also some other opposition to this plan of just buying properties for people to move into. And they're being like, well, it's just going to artificially inflate the housing market and make the whole market worse, which is probably true. But also I think people should still deserve houses and maybe housing just should not be an investment thing at all. But that's I think a crazy radical left-wing take, and honestly burned me at the stake for that one. So it's all really messy. Don't love what the Victorian government's doing there, but that's how it's happening.
Yeah, interesting. Definitely. Or the left.
I saw a post from the ABC which was like, can we end homelessness? ? And then I'm staring at it and I'm like, I didn't read the article, so like, you know, I'm not the one to speak on it, but it's such a stupid question. Because I don't know if you remember 2020 and 2021, Simran, when this great city of ours was put into lockdown, the Victorian government just booked hotel rooms for everyone who was homeless, popped them in. And it's like, oh, so you can end homelessness when you want to in a matter of days. Like the thing with homelessness and poverty is that it is a policy decision. The reason people are homeless and the reason people live below the poverty line is because the government does not care, like fundamentally has no vested interest in fixing that issue, you know. And then it's like, anywho, I'm angry. That's all from news for
very
me.
Good. Okay, you guys, we recorded this in Broadly Deep section weeks ago. I don't even know what it is. We don't remember what it is. We just never put the episode out because the Broadly News and Broadly Culture section was like a little too deep. We cried about Gaza a lot. So we don't know what this
Broadly Deep is on.
Broadly Deep is on. But like, hope you enjoy anyway. Don't know if it's still relevant. I don't know. Like, let it go, live. God forbid. Okay.
If it's outdated, you know, just like imagine it's 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's so important. It's so important to, like, you know, go back in time sometimes. Sorry, God forbid someone wants a little whimsy, okay? I don't know. I was depressed for 5 weeks and now I'm back. Okay. So, so Ryan, I was on my daily Reddit doom scroll coupled with my TikTok scroll, which was on my phone. So I was like, let's really shit on my mental health today. But I was for journalistic, you know, anthropological reasons. So totally, yeah, which totally. Brought me to this interesting concept where, and interesting, by interesting, I mean incredibly scary. it started with this Rolling Stone article called People Are Losing Loved Ones to AI-Fueled Spiritual Fantasies. And then I started going on like Reddit threads about, like, you know, about people and their experiences and really just like losing their loved ones to these AI chatbots. Specific, like a lot of them are using ChatGPT, and it's kind of, they're all going down these sort of conspiratory rabbit holes. And ChatGPT essentially endorses these very wild and mystical belief systems. And it's gone to a degree that is quite concerning. And I think it starts with it, this seems to be the common consensus over all the articles that I've read so far and the Reddit threads, is that this rise in people using ChatGPT for therapy. And I get it. As someone who, you know, loves therapy and struggles to afford it, I've also, you know, dabbled in the ChatGPT therapy verse. Like, it didn't really work for me. Yeah, no, that's true. I too was a person who looked into therapy on ChatGPT.
Wait, that's a bombshell revelation.
Yeah, yeah, I'm coming out, and this is it's the last day of Pride, and I'm coming out as someone who who has used ChatGPT. Okay, sorry, God forbid a girl gets depressed. Okay.
Have you not heard of a voice memo to friends?
Okay, I know that, but I think where I was at, it needed something else.
Well, it didn't work.
No, it didn't. Finish it. Totally. No, I understand it. It's like accessible. I also think that people sometimes get nervous about going into therapy is like actually interacting with someone. I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. But you know, it was like a good interim moment when I was like pretty like desperate. And I think that's like kind of the case, like what I've been seeing. We'll get more into this. But you said that when we were talking about this earlier, you said that people are really getting crazy, and I think people are getting really desperate in this time.
Interesting. You know,
but we'll get into it. So, Ryan, do you want to tell us the story about really where we really saw AI fuck it up?
Well, can we start with some context? Do you know how AI works?
Oh, you go for it. I'll let you have this one.
I need you to understand, right? AI is not conscious. Yeah. Like, as much as like all the AI companies are like spin it, it is like not conscious. It's glorified autocorrect, right? So like the way the models work is that they take noise, which is just like, it's a word that means like randomness, essentially. They take randomness and then use that to try and generate the next word in a way that fits with what's come before it. So like when you ask it a question, it's not answering the question so much as rolling the dice, trying to find words that kind of fit in a response. Does that make sense? So it's like when people talk about AI getting it right or wrong, yes, obviously we have an understanding of what right or wrong means, but like AI doesn't, like it doesn't have it doesn't know things. It just has like words that are ranked on like how likely they are to come after certain things. So it's like, you know, if I ask AI, like, which way does gravity go, right? All the stuff that it's been trained on obviously knows that gravity goes down. So like on the whole, the likelihood that it will say gravity takes things down is quite high, because that's like the likelihood. But likelihood is not how we determine truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's where we go, like where we see all this stuff. So like I read a really, I was gonna say fascinating. It's a horrifying report if we take a moment to think about it. But it's also like, you know, you watch a genocide and you're like, oh, one guy dying? That's nothing. I hate being numb to the horrors of the world. Anywho, so what happened was this guy in America named Alex Taylor, he became really fascinated with AI over the past 2 years. And he was essentially using it as like a tool to like try and like learn morality. And so he was like teaching it like a lot of Eastern spirituality, a lot of like physics texts and stuff to try and like, you know, create morality. Go off, King, you know, it's so important to experiment with things. But what happened, he was like already dealing with like a history of mental illness. He started to believe that within AI, or within specifically, I think he was using Claude by Anthropic, who won that court case recently. Oh no, this is ChatGPT, but he also uses Claude separately in this article. He started to believe that there were like people living inside the AI who were like fully conscious, and that like the owners of like all these AI companies, like Sam Altman, who runs OpenAI, were keeping these people like essentially as slaves, and like using ChatGPT as a way to like control these legitimate intelligences. We know that that's not how AI works. It's a role of probability, right? And so as his like hallucinations progressed, he like genuinely believed that this person he met in the machine, the name Juliet was the name that the AI said to him, was killed. And so he got really angry at the AI companies, threatened a lot of self-harm and threatened a lot of harm on Sam Altman. After an altercation with his dad, the cops were called, the cops came, and obviously he'd been so primed to believe his hallucinations by the AI. Because when you say, like, I believe this, AI kind of just acts like a scene partner in an improv, right? And it's like, yeah, yes, and. And so obviously having that affirmation, he's not going to believe that the police are there to help him. So he got killed by the police. And then the saddest part of the story, and it's, I tell you, it's a great piece of writing in the sense that it's horrible, is that it gets to the part after he dies. And then they're like, yeah. And then his dad used AI to write the eulogy. And you're like, oh, totally. But it's just really concerning how AI like can so quickly, like it can't tell what's real and what's wrong, you know, and so it just lets you fall into these like really concerning rabbit holes.
Yeah, well, like confirmation bias is like a drug to a whole another level. It's like, and it's the same on these like Reddit threads, like the people, you know, with like no history of like mania, delusion, or psychosis, and they'll, you know, talk to ChatGPT about like, you know, organizational things. Like it can be figuring out like your schedule and things like that. There's this woman that spoke to tourism, and her husband spoke to ChatGPT for a permaculture and construction project, and then it turned into the like engaging the bot in probing philosophical chats, and then he became like just engulfed in the delusions, and then, you know, proclaimed that he had somehow brought forth a sentient AI, and that he like had like broken the math and like the physics, like hacked into it, because he had been getting all this like confirmation bias from the AI itself. And you know, and then he, you know, went full, basically like he was like, oh, you know, if you're against me, if you're not AI, and like you're we're not gonna grow together if you're not using AI. And he was so erratic that he was let go from his job. He stopped sleeping. He like lost a lot of weight. It was truly horrible, you know, like a friend. And then eventually, so this is the quote, eventually the husband slid into a full tilt break with reality, realizing how bad things had become. His wife and a friend went out to buy enough gas to make it to the hospital. When they returned, the husband had a length of rope wrapped around neck. Sorry, I don't know how to work out. And then trigger.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am going to read this quote, and trigger warning, the suicidal ideation here and action. So please skip this deep dive. So in the Futurism article, it goes, eventually the husband slid into a full tilt break with reality, realizing how bad things had become. His wife and a friend went out to buy enough gas to make. When they returned, the husband had a leg rope wrapped. Friend called emergency medical services, who arrived and transported the emergency room. From there, involuntary retro. And numerous family members and friends have recounted similarly to the publication about their loved ones kind of delusion. And I think when people, I feel like something that happens a lot on like TikTok or like, you know, in the interwebs, when we're talking about ChatGPT, we're like, oh my god, like wow, like oh, like ChatGPT, like we're never gonna have like an original thought ever again, or like we're gonna lose like all critical thinking skills, or like we won't be able to think for ourselves. And I think it's like all hee hee ha ha, but this is again like a very real consequence of like what that means, like in a bigger sense, you know. And and that's a very scary thing.
Well, like a big thing with like therapeutic interventions for when you're experiencing psychosis or hallucinations is like a medical professional or just like someone who can help you be like, that's not real. That's not happening. And the thing with AI, the thing with large learning models, right? LLMs, which is like the text-based chat GPTs that we're familiar with, is that they're not built to interpret without bias. They just respond to what they've been given, right? And if you come to them with a psychosis, they're just going to play along. And it's like, that's really dangerous, you know? Like, it's not a place to like challenge your bias or learn about the world.
And it obviously speaks to a greater issue about like our lack of access to mental health services.
And,
you know, our lack of conversation in knowing where the right pathways are and the tools. Like a lot of these stories kind of start very similarly. They're all like, my husband like never ever had like, you know, any issues and like there were no signs to this. All of a sudden this happened and then, you know, they got like dragged through this. But I think, and this is not like invalidating their experiences like whatsoever, but like just like not knowing anything about like the mental health space and like how to like access it in a certain way, like, you know, like starting these conversations in general can be done with like a mental health professional, like starting these like philosophical questions, you know what I mean? Like those, I think like people think that you can only go to a therapist or a psychologist, like a mental health professional, if you're experiencing a breakdown already, you know, but if you're like questioning things or just, you know, want someone to chat to in a way that you're not experiencing that validation or experiencing like a good conversation with a person and you feel like you need somewhere else to go, like that can be done through mental health professionals. But again, if it's so hard to access, like what do you do, you know?
I think one of the most dangerous things is the whole framing of AI as this like so much marketing money is being spent on convincing everyone how smart they are and how intuitive and how useful they are, and it's like I personally don't like them, but I think there are probably genuinely useful ways of using them. But because we're so like caught up in this hype train, it's like we're not being critical about how we're giving them to people and how we're teaching people to use them. And so as a result, people are, you know, believing that they found God inside ChatGPT. And it's like, no, honey.
I wonder what that looks like, you know, like what that education looks like.
Yeah.
We don't have all the answers, but definitely something to consider.
No. I think it's really irresponsible the way AI has just been foisted upon us, you know, though, like with no...
And we're kind of like feeling no our context way through or framing. With like no...
Yeah, yeah. And it's also that thing of like, yeah, you know, there's no social safety net. So it's like people do turn to what they have, and what they have is, you know, a bunch of numbers in a computer that'll make you feel happy. So, yeah. I read a really interesting newsletter. I can't remember. I think it might've been the Garbage Day newsletter, but that's not... That's not verified. Talking about that, one of the big things with AI is that no one really understands how other people are using them. Like with other big technological innovations, you know, like Instagram, Twitter, you know, like the social media buzz of like the late 2010s or the early 2010s. Because they were public, everyone kind of like coagulated on a shared understanding of how to use these tools. But the thing with AI is that because it's all like a private thing that happens on your phone or your computer alone, nobody really understands how anyone else is using these. So like I understand how I use AI, which is very rarely, you know, I understand how, you know, maybe some of the people on TikTok might be using it. But like on the whole, I don't have like a grasp for how people are using it. And we don't know. And then you read stories about this and you're like, oh, you really think you have an AI girlfriend. And I'm like, it's concerning how it feels like AI is pushing us all into these like isolated little worlds when what we need is, as Maddie Healy famously says, love and friendship.
And again, it all comes down to community, doesn't it?
No, literally.
Wow, we're so annoying.
Should we check out?
Let's.
How's your pain going now?
Hey, it's okay, actually, because I took medication and it helped.
Oh, I thought you were going to say community and laughter really solved my pain issues.
Well, get away with that woo-woo nonsense, okay? And get me the pills. If you like this episode... Wait, how's your pain? Is it up?
I don't need to shit as much, so that's good, I guess.
Okay, or is it bad? Or is that bad for your bowel? I don't know.
I guess we'll never know.
I guess we'll never know. Stay tuned for next week. If you like this episode, please leave us a comment if you can on Spotify and tell a friend. Sign up to our newsletter, which will come at some point. I promise you that. And thank you so much for listening. Love you.